The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, so many things to talk about, so much happening. Israel now moved our clocks back to winter time, so we are on the same time zone as South Africa.
Welcome.
For those who
it's not bad
friends,
this time
family,
of day.
Business associates. We're on the same clock now. It also means we've had a bit of rain. It's kind of heading towards the winter and finally a little bit of rain, some thunderstorms. So definitely a change of atmosphere. The last Shabbat was Chaye Sarah. Traditionally, that's the Shabbat when people head down to Hebron to celebrate Shabbat there. Of course, that's the Shabbat that we read about, not only the life of Sarah, but also the critical purchase of the Marat HaMachpelah, the caves of the patriarchs. The whole system that went down about how that was purchased. And this was, of course, the Shabbat where people like to go and exercise their right to visit the cave of the patriarchs. Less so this Shabbat than usual at this time of year, but nonetheless, there were still people who did that. And just another interesting thing, even before we get into the main stories, I don't know if you saw that an Israeli company will be trialing a coronavirus vaccine.
Absolutely.
Which
incredible.
Is an oral one. So this is Oramed, an Israeli pharmaceutical company, and they're due to start clinical trials in South Africa alongside a clinical trial that will be held in Tel Aviv as well for an oral vaccine. Do people think that they would prefer to take an oral vaccine?
Well, certainly it does seem to be a lot less scary for people. We in fact spoke about it on the podcast yesterday, and it is an amazing story. Fantastic that South Africa is part of this trial. So very good news there. Other than that, if we can talk about some of the stories, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has arrived in Glasgow for the climate summit.
Yes, yeah, so much going on around the climate summit and so much going around in Israeli politics right now. Of course, the story of the day was that when the Prime Minister boarded his flight to Glasgow yesterday to attend the climate summit, he didn't mention one word about climate because his head is completely somewhere else right now. And that means it's really more in the area of getting the state budget passed, which is due to happen this week. And so he was much more inclined to hold some discussion about people who are trying at the moment to torpedo a successful passage of the state budget. And that was what he really wanted to talk about. But the point is that he's gone off to Glasgow and he will have to talk climate issues in Glasgow, which of course I think he's probably ready to do. Quite a lot of work went into the preparation for the summit, not only on a climate related issues, but also because the Prime Minister is going to be using the climate summit in Glasgow to meet with a host of world leaders on the sidelines of the climate summit. He's due to meet with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. He's due to meet with French President Emmanuel Macron, and also with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and perhaps quite significantly also the Bahraini Crown Prince and the Prime Minister Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa. So he's going to be holding a lot of diplomatic meetings, and some people have billed this as Naftali Bennett's opportunity to really step onto the world stage to become something of a significant diplomat rather than just a kindergarten prime minister, which some people think he's been up until now. But also on the issue of climate-related issues, which of course is really what we would like to focus on, finally Israel was forced to announce that they will be making plans in order to reach the targeted zero emissions by the year 2050. Originally, a few months ago, not so long ago, the energy minister announced that that would be a virtually impossible thing to reach. Then there was some talk about trying to get to an 85% reduction of emissions by the year 2050. And finally, there was this announcement that Israel will endeavor to meet the global target of zero emissions by 2050. I think we've got a lot of work to do until we get there. Israel seems to be behind the game on many of the necessary steps that have to be taken in order to reach a situation of zero emissions. When you look, for example, at the number of electric cars in Israel as a percentage of the overall number, and you compare that to the way that other countries are doing things, then we are kind of nowhere in terms of being able to get to that particular target. But just a slightly different take on this whole story has been offered by the son of our former Prime Minister, Yair Netanyahu. And he went out making a public statement saying that if global warming is made by man, how come the world is going through phases of warming and cooling for billions of years? So what he's effectively saying is that this whole issue of global warming and the fact that it's a man-made issue is something of a misnomer and is slightly incorrect. And then he went on to say that towards the end of the last ice age was when the last global warming situation took place, when men lived in caves and obviously couldn't have contributed towards global warming. He then goes on to say that because Israel is 0.0008% of humanity, which is not even equivalent to a small town in China, how can we be related to the issue of global warming? And then the main point, of course, this is the kicker. Do you not understand that this is a delusional excuse to promote progressive and communist laws?
Oh my gosh.
Those are the words of the son of our former Prime Minister, Yair Netanyahu,
and
on the issue of global warming.
Stop him from talking.
They can't. They really can't. But I think, you know, overall, there are definitely moves towards Israel making steps to improve emissions, to reduce the number of emissions that are produced. But there is still a long, long way to go. And I'm not sure that this climate conference will necessarily change things in any dramatic way, even though there are certainly moves now. It's become more of an issue, let's say. There's no doubt that the climate conference has brought a lot of attention to it, and whether this attention will be ongoing or whether it will disappear next week as we head into the state budget, only time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely right. And taking a look at some of the other stories, well, it is a big one because from today, tourists are set to return to Israel for the first time since the start of the corona pandemic. It is a bit confusing. I must say that half of our conversations over the weekend were people trying to figure out if they can go, what they can do, what are they doing with their children, are their children allowed to go if they're not vaccinated? It is a bit confusing.
It is a bit confusing, and I specifically looked for mentions about unvaccinated children since we had that discussion late last week and the question was asked. And I will be honest and say that I have not found any reference.
That's the problem. People don't have these answers.
Issue of unvaccinated children. And so my reading of the current situation is that unvaccinated children will not be allowed. Mm. That is my current reading of the situation, because the list of people who are allowed is quite specific. In other words, what's been published is those who can actually come. No mention at all of unvaccinated children, no mention at all of anybody unvaccinated, to be honest. It's only people who have been vaccinated or who have recovered from coronavirus, according to certain criteria, only certain vaccines. And of course, you need to have been vaccinated within the last 6 months. Not only that, you can't have spent time in a red country, which has high infection rates, during the 14 days prior to arriving in Israel. And of course, you will be required to have a PCR test upon your arrival and to stay in quarantine until such time as the negative result for that PCR test is sent to you. For those people coming from Russia who have received the Sputnik vaccine, which is also on that list, another test will be required in the form of a serological test in order to check antibodies. So that is in addition to the regular PCR test that will be required for all others. So as I see things at the moment, I don't see how unvaccinated children will be allowed in the country. There is a special form that will need to be completed before you arrive in Israel. And of course, the tests that you're required to do will be undertaken at the airport. Nobody leaves the airport, not even Israelis, without doing the test before you leave. So that seems to be the situation. Lots of confusion, but also a certain level of excitement that this is coming after such a long time. As I said previously, my best advice is to consult with the local embassy if you can get hold of them in order to find out what the status of unvaccinated children is. But at the moment, I don't see that unvaccinated children will be allowed, or unvaccinated people of any type will be allowed in, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that's been pretty much our understanding of this as well. So if you are one of those people, and I know that many people are trying to get there for in December, for example, to see family they haven't seen for a long time, to attend family functions, if your child is not, or your children are not vaccinated, I just don't see that you will be able to get there, unfortunately, at this stage. In the latest of the cyber wars, an Israeli gay dating site has been hit with a ransomware attack. Why was this site targeted?
So this is the Black Shadow Group again surfacing, which has hit an Israeli gay dating site called Atraf. I don't know whether they hit this site because it's kind of sensitive, and the fact is that there are people who would not want their names to be published in the public area, because they might be in the closet, or they might not want to be known to be on that particular dating site, or whether it's simply because the dating site had some sort of a cyber weakness associated with it, which made it an easy target. Either way, this is just another hit by Black Shadow. We understand that this is the same group that hit an Israeli insurance company approximately a year ago that drew a lot of attention and concern about the fact that it was able to gain such easy access to the network of this particular insurance company. And now not only Atraf, but of course some other companies as well, Dan Bus Company, a tour booking company, a few other companies have also been hit. The Israeli the National Cyber Directorate has actually said that they warned a certain hosting company that there were weaknesses in the way that they had set their networks up, and that they should strengthen their cybersecurity. And that's exactly, it seems, how the Black Shadow Group gained access to the gay dating site, and indeed to other sites that are being hosted by this particular hosting company. The hosting company claims that they did take heed of the warnings. Unfortunately, however, they have been hit. And once again, Israel has been the target. We understand that, at least on the basis of some of the statements that are made, that there is a certain Iranian element which stands behind Black Shadow. So this seems to be more about political capital than it is about the $1 million that has been demanded for not publishing the names of those individuals whose names have been downloaded from that gay dating site. Of course, the gay community, the LGBT community, is in uproar over this particular issue. Many helplines have been open to help people to try to get through this the matter that they're having to confront at the moment. The $1 million seems not to be forthcoming right now in order to prevent the publication of these names. So it's not clear exactly what's going to happen from here on out. But obviously this comes on the back of all of those Iranian petrol stations that were attacked last week. And there are some people who are drawing a link between the two events. On the one hand, what went down in Iran last week as opposed to what's going down in Israel this week with this particular cyber attack. It seems like these cyber attacks are here to stay, whether they be ransomware, whether they be attempts to try to exert some political pressure. But it seems as if though Israel is going to have to really step up, even relatively unknown and relatively minor sites will need to increase their cybersecurity. And I think that businesses around Israel in general are really stepping up to try to strengthen the use of networks, the use of cloud computing services in order to prevent this sort of thing from happening. I think that this is going to be an ongoing issue. I don't see the end to this at all. And I think that Israel will strike back with all its force. And it will be a tit-for-tat situation. This is not over yet.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, but it is a problem very, very clearly. Israel Air Force F-15 aeroplane has escorted a U.S. Air Force B-1 heavy bomber through Israeli airspace as it made its way to the Persian Gulf. What is the significance of this?
Well, I think there are a few significances. We spoke a little bit about the Blue Flag event, which involved a number of different countries, air forces coming to Israel to try and practice out some Air Force maneuvers to get to know each other, to get some communication going. That seems to have been a very, very successful event. I saw a wonderfully emotional video that was put out by the Israeli Air Force that involved some of the pilots from the other Air Forces that were here for that particular exercise, and it seems to have gone very well and very successfully indeed. The latest, of course, now is this USB-1B heavy bomber that was on its way to the Gulf. That in itself is a statement, because this is a the B-1 bomber and has these so-called bunker buster bombs that it can drop. And of course, we do know that Israel is trying to put a plan together to somehow attack the Iranian, or potentially attack the Iranian nuclear program. And it is relatively publicly out there that in order to attack some of those locations that are located beneath the mountains, that are built into these mountains way underground, there is going to be some sort of a bunker buster capability required in order to get down that deep and to attack some of those locations which are well underground. And of course, the potentially the American B-1B bomber could be exactly the thing that would be required. So of course, when you see these F-15s escorting the B-1B bomber through Israeli airspace as it heads towards the Gulf, that is really a massive statement being made, not only about the B-1B bomber going to the Gulf, but also about the cooperation that exists between the US Air Force and the Israeli Air Force, as epitomized by some of these wonderful pictures that we've seen showing the airplanes flying alongside each other over Israeli airspace. So I think that this cooperation, mutual respect between the air forces has been demonstrated very, very succinctly, but very clearly, not only through the blue flag event that we saw, but now with this a huge bomber, which has some incredibly interesting capabilities. And who knows whether in the future this might not form part of what Israel might want to do as it heads towards trying to control or perhaps even take out the Iranian nuclear capability.
Absolutely right. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it's just gone 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.